I'm Chris Comer. I'll be here with you until midnight, and in just a couple minutes, I'm a little nervous about this. I'm going to talk to, live on the telephone, I'm going to talk to Jack DeJohnette, one of the most famous drummers in the history of music, one of the most famous personalities in the history of jazz. This guy's played with everyone. I mean, just about everyone. He even played with Coltrane a little bit. Jack came up through the Charles Lloyd Quartet in the mid-60s, was picked up by Miles Davis's first electric group, played off and on with different people in the 60s, including Keith Jarrett and Bill Evans, Pat Metheny later in the 70s and 80s. Jack's had his own groups, the Jack DeJohnette Special Edition, the Jack DeJohnette New Directions, and some other groups. We'll be talking to Jack in just a minute. Let's kick things off with a track that I really enjoy. This is a track from his first Special Edition record on ECM that came out in 1980. It's called Zoot Suite, and Zoot Suite has been re-recorded by him on other occasions. I do not know if this is the first time he recorded it or not. I'll probably ask him this in a little bit. So this is Zoot Suite by Jack DeJohnette, featuring David Murray on saxophone and bass clarinet, Arthur Bly on saxophone, Peter Warren on bass, and Jack DeJohnette on drums and piano. This is WAIF. We'll be back with Jack DeJohnette in just a minute. that's a slamming tune, isn't it? I think that is a cool song. That's Zoot Suite by Jack DeJohnette Special Edition with David Murray on tenor, saxophone, and bass clarinet, Arthur Bly on alto, and Peter Warren on bass, and Jack DeJohnette, the composer and the drummer on that track, from a 1980 ECM release, Jack DeJohnette Special Edition. Jack, can you hear me?
Yeah.
How you doing tonight?
Great.
This is a real honor to have you on the show. You're one of the most legendary drummers of all time. I mean, you're up there with the great ones, and for you to take a minute to talk to our audience is really special, so I thank you in advance for coming on the show.
Oh, yeah, great. I'd just like to say something a little bit on a sad note that Elvin Jones passed away today.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So just for those listeners out there, he had been sick for a while, and he passed away somewhere around 4 o'clock this afternoon.
I had heard that he did a gig at Yoshi's a week or two ago in Oakland and wasn't doing too well, but I had not heard that he passed away.
Yeah, so he's passed away today. So great legend, speaking of legends, he left us a great legacy of music and inspiration. So glad that he came through here.
Well, he was a great inspiration to you back in the old days, wasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah.
In fact, you had to learn not to play as loud as him, if I recall. He'd be playing with Coltrane, and he'd be slamming, so everybody thought, oh, we'll slam like Elvin. But then when you played with normal people who weren't, as vicious as Coltrane, you'd be playing too loud.
Well, a lot of drummers had to make that adjustment. So.
Well, tell me for a minute about Elvin. I'm sure you saw him play and played with him back in the 60s and maybe even the late 50s, didn't you?
Well, I did play with him, but I filled in for him. When he didn't make it in Chicago, so I played with Coltrane about 3/4 of a set. And, Elvin, the thing about Elvin and Coltrane, which made that quartet, I mean, everybody in the quartet, but Elvin had a very spiritual empathy with Coltrane. And that's why that music was so powerful. Not just the volume, but it was the intention and passion behind it that made it, so wonderful, and transcendent.
You're saying that John Coltrane was great, but having a drummer like Elvin behind him made him even greater.
Oh, I would think, definitely. I think, but having the whole quartet, that's not just, Jimmy and McCoy, they all had to pull it together.
Mm-hmm. When you listen, I'm too young. I never saw those guys play. But when I heard some of those old records by that group, there's something about Elvin's style, and even some of the other records Elvin's made with other groups, there's something about the way Elvin Jones plays that stops you in your tracks. It can be heart-stopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and Elvin actually is in other situations, Elvin plays very, very dynamically, very sensitively. So, is in the quartet. He definitely, because John played the way he played, he had to play to match that. He had to play at the volume he played, which was appropriate.
Tell me about the first time you saw Elvin play. I'm sure you were very young at the time.
Well, I heard Elvin play. I said, yeah, I want to do that. He inspired me.
Was he one of the reasons you became a drummer? Because you were a piano player first, if I recall from reading your biography.
No, actually, Vern Alfornia from the Ahmad Jamal Trio, live at Point Piano, was the reason I got into drums.
Mm-hmm.
So he was my first influence on drums.
Elvin was?
No, Vern Alfornia.
Oh, okay. Tell me a little bit about him. I'm not familiar with him as much as I am Elvin, because, of course, everybody knows about Elvin.
Okay, well, you and the fans at home should go listen to Ahmad Jamal, because Ahmad Jamal is one of the great, great innovators, and still is, over the last 50 years. In fact, Ahmad was known to have great trios, and one of his, he had a trio which was piano, guitar and bass, and then brought in drums, and he had a big hit about or early 60s, album called Live at the Persian, But Not For Me. That's the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a big hit of a standard tune called Point Siena. And you can get that. In fact, you should check that out and get that. And Ahmad was very much very influential on a lot of piano players, particularly Miles Davis. And Miles Davis quintet with Philly Joe Jones and Coltrane and Red Garland. And so when Ahmad would come out with But Not For Me and standards that he would play, Miles would listen. When Miles would come out on the working with Miles Davis or steaming with the Miles Davis quintet with numbers that he heard Ahmad play. You know.
And
Ahmad also had the way of using space and using the rhythm section, and Miles learned from that.
Ahmad was somewhat of a minimal type of player, wasn't he?
Not really. Not really. You got to do your homework on Ahmad.
Okay, I will. Yeah. I've got an assignment now from Jack DeJohnette.
But Ahmad is one of the giant innovators on the piano, and you know. Go back and check out a lot of his great records. He's still going. He's 75 or 76, 77, something
mm-hmm.
like that. But he's still amazing. Very amazing.
And what did you say the name of the drummer was that played with him that inspired you so much?
Fournier. He's originally from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
But like so many drummers from the South came up to Chicago, where there's a lot of music going on. Vernell. Very unique in his brushwork. That brushwork I heard, and when I heard that record, I went out and got me a pair of brushes and started playing those before I even had a set of drums. At that time, I was a pianist, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got into drums after I heard that.
From what I understand, you were a pretty good piano player before the drums sort of took over your gigging.
Right, drums. My first instrument, I started having lessons when I was 4.
Okay.
And then when I got into became a teenager, I started to get into it a little more seriously. And, it helped my writing out a lot, so my composition and stuff, and also helped my drumming a lot. So piano is like, they call it the grandfather of all instruments, or grandmother.
Yeah.
What I call it.
Do you play any instruments besides piano and drums?
Yeah, I fool around with a little bass, but I play some hand percussion, flutes, various flutes, recorders, and ocarinas, things like that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Jack DeJohnette on WAIF. I'm Chris Comer, your host. And if you'd like to call into the program, Jack has told me that he's happy to take listener phone calls. So if anyone would like to call in and talk to Jack DeJohnette, the phone number here at WAIF is 513-961-8900. We've been talking a little bit about how you got started playing the drums and so forth, but let's talk about what you're doing right now. I had read that you did a gig in April in Chicago with Keith Jarrett and Gary Peacock. Besides that, what's going on currently for Jack DeJohnette?
I also like to tell everybody to find out what I'm doing and what's going on. Check my website, jackdejohnette.com.
Right.
And, actually at the beginning of the year, I was doing out at Yoshi's actually with a special project with John Scofield and Larry Goldings. It's called Celebrating Tony Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And we played a week there, and this is a very special project, which we played compositions written by Tony, and particularly some of those from the Lifetime Band. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, Emergency, and right. There was another one, Jack Bruce and John McLaughlin, these guys
right.
played on it.
So we're doing some of that music, and also some pieces that were associated with Tony, like some of Wayne's songs, also some tunes from Larry Young's album, like Moon Train from the Unity album.
Mm-hmm.
and some of Miles' tunes and McLaughlin songs and some of our own pieces. So we did a week out there, sold out, and it was just incredible playing that music. And we're going to be doing a tour of Europe in November, and then we're going to be 2006. We're going to do a tour of the United States and Europe.
And does the group have a name again, or is it just the Tony?
Celebrating Tony Williams.
Celebrating Tony Williams is the name of the group. Okay, we'll keep an eye out for that. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't you the cat that replaced Tony Williams and Miles' group, or was there another drummer in between?
No. I replaced Tony. In fact, actually, I filled in for Tony one time before when he wasn't able to work with the group in the 60s, late 60s.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure that you were seeing a lot of success with Charles Lloyd's group at the time, but jumping into Miles' group, was that a world difference from being in Charles' group, or was it just like moving sideways?
Well, it was different, because there's different personalities, and Miles, of course, was, definitely one of the visionaries and innovators of modern, jazz music. So, it moved on. It was just an extension of what I had already been doing.
Mm-hmm. At what point did the shows get really big? I know that Miles played at places like the Fillmore and stadium and arena gigs, but was Charles Lloyd doing gigs like that too?
Well, we had done the Fillmore already prior to Miles.
Mm-hmm.
And all the Fillmore and all of the festivals about a year or two before Miles. But then, Miles, then we came out, did the Fillmore East, Fillmore West. Did some live recordings of that music. So I was there doing that twice, with Bill Graham, who was quite a visionary himself in terms of programming eclectic music, for young people. So, it wasn't just one thing. We used to do shows with Janis Joplin before she went solo, the Big Brother and the Holding Company, Jefferson Airplane,
mm-hmm.
to name a few, the Cream, Paul Butterfield Blues Band, just to name a few. So it was a great period, great time.
Yeah, I guess what I was getting at with my question was playing gigs with Charles and Miles' groups were probably more like rock star gigs. You had big stages, big PAs, big crowds, and it's probably a world of difference from playing at Minton's or Birdland or some of the more standard jazz clubs from the early 60s.
Yeah, it was a bigger venue, although we did do concerts, and it was a bigger venue. It was great to, it was reaching a wider audience. So in that sense,
mm-hmm.
Miles and Charles had that going for them. Developing a young audience and getting to a wider audience.
Did it change? Did playing for these wider audiences and on these bigger stages, did it change the music and the approach to the playing?
Not really. I mean, the intention was still the same. Was playing, taking risks with the music and going for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but that early Electric Miles group that you were in with Dave Holland and Chick Corea and Keith Jarrett and all the other guys, what was that like? Not everybody gets to be in a band like that, and that was one of the all-time world's greatest bands from Bitches Brew all the way up through the mid-70s. That was an intense group. I've heard all the records. I've seen some videos. Can you give me some recollections of the group or what it was like and how it was different than playing in some of the other groups that you'd been in before and after?
Well, the thing about Miles' approach was a work in progress. So, Miles didn't talk much. So a lot of the cues for all the pieces came from him just playing maybe the first line of a piece, and we all knew what it was. So, a lot of it involved a lot of listening, and a lot of it involved a lot of collective playing. And Miles liked that. that collective playing behind him. And you know, of course, Miles had the capacity when he played his trumpet to bring it all together,
because
you know, there was a lot going on. But you know, he made it very cohesive by the sound and the tension, the focal point of his trumpet.
Yeah. Well, the music changed rapidly. I watched a video one night, and it had Miles's quintet with Tony Williams and Herbie and the guys, and they were all wearing suit and ties, coats, and they were playing, I wouldn't call it standard jazz, but they were playing a pretty composed style of hard bop. And just a few years later, there's Miles with the sunglasses and the shirt and the scarves, and all you guys are playing out, and it's out. Even by today's standards, it's still a little ahead of its time. Why did the music change so rapidly in such a short amount of time?
Well, the music changed. It also was a reflection of what was happening economically, politically, and socially. You know, so the music was, you know, there was a civil rights movement. There was people protesting war. There was a whole lot going on. So also, the radio stations were opening up. You know, we had a couple of stations that W and WBAI, where they were playing more eclectic forms of music. They weren't playing Jimi Hendrix, and they played Miles Davis. And, you know, they mix it up, and you know, DJs would play a piece for 12 minutes, you know, or 15 minutes, and so it was a real, real, shall we say, experimental time.
Yeah,
and you know, people felt like, you know, it's a time of experimentation and high creativity, you know. So that was part of that.
It just, like, you know, like I said, when I look back at the history of music and I look at records that were made between 1967 and maybe like 1972, the music changed more in those 4 or 5 years than it did from 1975 up to the present, or from 1950 to 1964. All of a sudden, things just went light speed. And you were there, and I wasn't. That's the only reason I ask.
Oh.
It's intense. I wish people would be coming along right now and doing something with the music like that, so 4 years from now, everything would be new.
Well, there are people out there doing things. I mean, there are people like Jason Moran and Nasheed Waits and Craig Osby, and there's Andrew Hill. There's a few people out there still doing some things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dave Holland. Herbie Hancock. So there's, you know, there's still people doing stuff, you know, still doing stuff. And, you know, the record industry just changed quite a bit. You know, somehow, a bit got a little more conservative, but there's still musicians out there doing their own things, you know. Let's see. Want to ask me something else?
Yeah, I've got a million questions. We're talking to Jack DeJohnette on WAIF. I'm your host, Chris Comer, and we do have an open line if you'd like to call in and talk to one of the most legendary jazz drummers that's ever been. Give a call to 513-961-8900. And even though I keep asking you the questions about all the old days, let's try to keep things a little contemporary. Who's putting out records nowadays that you are not necessarily playing with, but that you like to listen to?
Well, there's a drummer named Gerald Cleaver. Lives in Brooklyn, not too well known, but he's worked with people like Ralph Leasy, Don Byron. I was just listening to a record today by Jason Moran called The Bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard it?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
You gotta check it out. It's got Nasheed Waits and let's see, what's his bass player's name on it? Electric bass player.
You're looking for a CD sitting there right by the phone, aren't you?
Yeah, I had it here somewhere.
Because you find a lot of inspiration by listening to new music and music that's coming out.
Well,
and
sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I don't like to listen to anything. I just need space. So, because I play so much music, you know, I have to give my ears a rest. Let's see. I can't find it right now, but it's called Bandwagon.
Okay.
And Greg Osby, another one that I like to listen to.
We will definitely keep an eye out for Bandwagon. Maybe maybe we'll see one in the record store this week.
There's a pianist called, he's from Spain, Andalusia. His name is Chano Dominguez. And he's a very interesting pianist. He plays piano and like flamenco, like gypsy flamenco style. He has dancers, clappers. I saw him in the Cuban Free Jazz Festival in Havana. Like about five years ago. So, I like to listen to some of that, and I like to listen to some world music. There's a guy, an East Indian guy from England called Talvin Singh. He does a lot of things. Contemporary music with Indian music. And
yeah, he plays tabla and a lot of electronic production, doesn't he?
Music production, yeah. He's got some different stuff happening.
I've heard of Talvin. He's an intense guy.
Yeah, he's good.
Do you play Indian tabla yourself? I know it's a different kind of education than Western drumming, but do you play those?
Well, no, but I play an electronic instrument that has that. If you listen to... you listen to my record Oneness, Dancing with Nature Spirits, you hear it on one of those tracks.
Okay.
That's called the wave drum, and also on the Herbie Hancock New Standards album, you hear it on, what's it called? New York Minute. Da da dee da 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 da. That Don Elias and I am playing the tabla patch on that. I have an instrument now called a Roland HPD-15, which has over 600 percussion sounds, and then I use that.
Yeah.
There's talking drums, conga drums, bongos, all kinds of sounds in it. So, you know, I can play, you know, the impression of the tabla with a jazz sensibility.
Okay, so you embrace technology where some cats might think that a drum machine might put the drummer out of work. You like to use technology to better your own creativity.
Well, let's say talk about technology. Okay, we'll talk about what I'm doing now, which is I have my own label, which my daughter, my younger daughter Minya, my wife and business partner Lydia are helping me. You know, we're working together to create my new label called Golden Beams Productions. And I have a CD, the first CD I just put out. It's called Music in the Key of Ohm, which is quite different from jazz. It's not a jazz CD, but it's actually a CD using synthesizer and a new musical instrument, percussion instrument called a resonating bell.
Yeah, I saw that on your website. It's got like a blue album cover.
Yeah, that's actually my oldest daughter on there in a meditative pose.
I'd like to hear that. I've not heard that yet.
Well, you can go on and check it out. You can buy it also on the website. It's selling for $15, and you can click on it and buy it there. Well, I think we'll have some of it streaming.
That's at www.jackdejanette.com.
Right, and it's a CD that came out of some work that my wife does. She does healing work and energy work, and she needed something to work, you know, to relax her clients, and so I put together this CD. And she needed something that was an hour long, and so I made this CD, went into meditative state, made a CD for an hour, and actually a lot of people get pretty excited about it. So it can be used to relax, to meditate, yoga, or just to chill out, put on ambient music, you know, massage also.
It's like an ambient record.
Yeah, you might call it something like that. Yeah, it has many purposes, but
okay.
It's kind of a CD that... that you don't have to, that force you to listen to it. It just sort of penetrates, your being and the atmosphere. It does a grounding, helps ground and relax.
And again, it's called Music in the Key of Om.
Right.
Okay.
Music in the Key of Om.
We'll take a look for that. In fact, we'll get a copy and featured on the show on some subsequent evening here.
Okay.
At WAIF.
Well, okay. You might not want to play it for an hour because you might put everybody to sleep.
But. You might be surprised. We'll play anything we want at this station. This station.
Okay.
This is not a clear channel station. We do what we want here. That's one of the good things about WAIF.
Fantastic.
In fact, why don't we? Are you up for taking some calls from listeners now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, if anyone would like to call in and talk to Jack DeJeanette, the phone number here is 513-961-8900. My name is Chris Comer. And hello, Ron, you're on the air with Jack DeJeanette.
Hey, Chris and Jack, how you doing tonight?
Okay.
Cool. Hey, Jack, I was on the road with you in the early mid-70s with the CTI Jazz All-Star Package.
With who?
With the CTI Jazz All-Star Package.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ron Carter playing bass, and you, of course, drums, and I think Bob James
was
playing piano, and Milt Jackson vibes,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
Yeah, Lil Esther was on that set as well.
Yeah,
and I wanted to tell you, Jack, it was beautiful to hear you play, and the work that you've did with Pat Metheny and Ornette Coleman.
Oh, yeah.
I saw you guys at a couple of those gigs.
Oh, yeah, right.
And you've really meant a lot to me in my musical development, particularly through all your various recordings. I just wanted to give you a shout-out and just let you know how much your work has been appreciated.
Okay, man.
Okay.
Is that all you have for us tonight, Ron, is praise? You don't have any questions or anything, just praise?
I just got praise for Jack, man.
Okay.
Okay, man. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks for your call, Ron.
Okay, baby. Take care.
If anyone would like to call in just to praise Jack, that's fine. Call in and you can praise him all you want. If anyone would like to ask him a question about music, the arts, jazz music, playing with anybody from the history of jazz, because Jack's played with a lot of the great ones, give us a call here at 513-961-8900. Jack, is there anybody in the world of jazz that's still around that you have not played with that you are dying to get the groove on with?
Well, I'm not dying to do that. I'm living, actually.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm doing a recording with Hank Jones, actually, next month. I'm really looking forward to doing that.
And you'd never played with him up till now?
No, I haven't. Actually.
Wow.
Yeah, so Hank is somebody I really... And Randy Weston's another one I want to actually play with.
Mm-hmm.
Randy's a great pianist and composer, wrote, things like High Fly and the African Cookbook. He had a club in Morocco and Tangiers for some time. And he was always writing music that celebrated Africa, the African heritage. Let's see, who else?
You've played with a lot of the Chicago guys, a lot of the Art Ensemble and AACM guys, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there when it started.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you were in Chicago before you went to New York back in the early 60s, weren't you?
Yeah. Right. So that was quite a fertile musical scene mm-hmm. there. So, free jazz and, blues and everything. Still quite a musical town, Chicago.
We're going to take another phone call from a listener. Hello, this is Jeff. Jeff, you're on the air with Jack DeJeanette on WAIF.
Hi, Jack. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Jeff. Go ahead.
Okay, good. First of all, I wanted to say that I saw a special edition, the version with David Murray and Arthur Blythe at Gilly's in, 1980, something like that, in Dayton.
Yeah.
You play so many shows, I don't know if you remember that show at all, but what I wanted to say about it was that I had been to a couple jazz shows before that, but having attended that show, that really opened my ears up to how exciting a jazz concert could be, and I knew who you were. I'd heard you on some ECM records, and Bitches Brew and stuff like that, but wasn't prepared for just the level of musicianship that all four musicians in that band had. And so I wanted to start with that. The second set of the show, I've been meaning to ask this since 1980, started, I didn't have the album yet at that time, but I bought it right after the concert. I think the album came out like the week that you came to Jilly's or something like that. But you played this really R&B, funky, bluesy kind of song to start the second set. And I'm curious, what in the world was that? It wasn't on the album.
Was it on the what?
It wasn't on the special edition album. Most of the other songs you played were on the special edition album. But some, like I said, real bluesy R&B kind of tune.
Now, Jeff, if Jack DeJohnette can remember his set list from 24 years ago, I'm going to be impressed.
I thought I'd throw it out there.
Hold on, Jeff.
I can't remember.
Okay. The thing I remember is, and, you know, I remember every little detail of this stuff. Peter Warren said at the beginning of, before the song started, he said, "This is dedicated to all the women in the audience." That doesn't prompt a memory, does it?
Jeff, I think every song is dedicated to all the women in the audience.
Okay.
Now, here's another question. What has become of Peter Warren? He was the bass player that night, and he was fantastic, and I've never seen him again, and so forth.
Hold on, Jeff. Jack is answering.
Yeah.
Yeah, Peter's in New York, and I think he's playing a little bit. He was sick for a while, but he's okay now. So, he's still around playing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anything else, Jeff? Because you're being a whirlwind tonight.
Let me throw this out. How did you end up working with David Murray, who was the playing saxophone and bass clarinet that night?
Well, I heard David around, you know, and the way he plays fit into what, you know, the way I was writing music then, and the way I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
He was perfect for what I wanted to do then.
Okay.
Anything else, Jeff?
That'll do it.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Okay, nice speaking with you, Jeff.
Jack DeJohnette, I didn't expect you to remember your set list from 24 years ago, but talk to us a little bit about David Murray. He's a real special cat in the history of jazz. He's a great saxophone player, a great band leader, and I don't know, was playing in Special Edition one of his first bigger gigs, or how did he come up?
Oh, David had been a band leader before that.
He'd been around for a while before playing with you?
Yeah. I mean, so, but, you know, David had an energy about his playing, which is I really liked. So, it fit what I was writing at the time. And then also I had Arthur Blythe, too, which is a contrasting player to... Arthur had a contrasting style to David, so they really complemented each other really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that first special edition album really came off really strong.
You know, when I look in the record bin at the record at the cool record stores under David Murray, he's quite prolific. There's 100 records in the bin by David Murray, and I don't know how long he's been around to record those hundreds of records, but he's something.
Sometime I think he's kind of hurt him in a way. I think he put out too much.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to put out too many records and overwhelm your listeners, even your most diehard fans?
Well, not if you have diehard fans, but you know, there's a lot of information on our music on all those CDs. It takes time to digest all that stuff over the years. But it's great that stuff is out there. There'd be a lot of stuff out there for people to catch up on.
We're talking to Jack DeJohnette on WAIF. We have an open phone line if you'd like to call in. The phone number is 961-8900. That's 513-961-8900. And when I look at a list of people you've played sessions with, played with in a group, or had in your own groups, it reads like the list of artists in the record store. Pretty much everybody in contemporary jazz has played with Jack DeJohnette at one time or another. Who are some of the people that you have the most memorable experiences with?
Well, Sonny Rollins, who I still work with occasionally. Mm-hmm. Thelonious Monk.
Well, I didn't know you had a chance to play with Thelonious Monk.
Yeah, I worked with Thelonious. Yeah, I worked with him for a week in Harlem.
Wow.
Club Baron. Yeah, I worked with,
See, I read that you got to play with Coltrane alongside of Rashid Ali.
And yeah, we worked in Chicago to plug Nickel for a week.
Yeah, and that was probably Alice, a pretty intense experience, wasn't it?
With Alice and Jimmy Garrison and Pharoah Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, in fact, Roscoe Mitchell actually came by one night and played with us.
Oh, yeah? See, now that's...
That was a pretty intense, week. Yeah, it was great. Fantastic.
Now, are some of these the most memorable gigging experiences you've had, the ones that you've taken the most into your own personal repertoire with, or are there other guys you've played with that maybe are not so famous or not so, quote-unquote, groundbreaking that you've gotten just as much or more inspiration from playing alongside?
Yeah, no, I played with, you know, people like Kenny Barron. I played with, people like Penny Maupin. I like a lot, and Bobby Hutcherson,
mm-hmm.
Jackie McQueen, Freddie Hubbard, I played with him, Art Farmer, Cedar Walton, Abby Lincoln.
Yeah.
That was one of my great times. She had a trio with Reggie Workman and Cedar Walton and myself. We used to play up in Harlem at the Wells, famous club up there.
Yeah.
Abby's fantastic. I learned a lot from her. I worked with Gloria Lynn. Singers are really great to work with. And also, Betty Carter. Betty Carter, when I first came to New York, I worked with Betty.
Hey, you know, a lot of great people have played with Betty Carter.
Yeah.
And everyone I've talked to who's ever played with her has had wonderful things to say about the experience.
Well, now there's something that really happened with Betty that was documented, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an album out on Verve. It's called Feed the Fire. And we did a European tour with Betty. We recorded this album called Feed the Fire, and it's Dave Holland and Jerry Allen. And I think you can get it. I mean, you have to, you know, search a bit, but it's a live recording in London. It is amazing. And one of the things that Betty did on that was she did a series of duets with one piano and voice, and then bass and voice, and then she did a we did a duet together with just drums and voice, and it's really like she's like a horn. So it's, people should really try and find this album. It's called Feed the Fire. The unfortunate thing about some of the record companies going on, like, you know, thanks to ECM, it's a catalog label, I have to mention, and so because of that, Manfred Eicher, he keeps the catalog going, so people can go back in the artist's history. I've been on the label for 30 years, and so people can find that. But I've made records as a leader with record companies like MCA, which and Milestones, and also I can think Fantasy, and you can't get those CDs, which document some of my earlier things, you know, and particularly the first ECM documents, the first special edition. But, you know, I stopped recording for ECM for some years, and I went to some American companies, and continued the special edition band, which had people in it like I had Chico Freeman and Howard Johnson, Rufus Reed. Well, actually, that was documented on ECM. Mm-hmm. That was it. But I had a new version of it, which featured Gary Thomas, Greg Ousby, Lonnie Plaxico, and incredible genius on the guitar, Mick Goodrich. And those were recorded on MCA. And the first one for MCA was called Irresistible Forces. And then we did another one called Audio Visual Skates. And then we did another one after Mick left. And I brought in an incredible, multi-talented artist, Michael Caine. And we did a couple of CDs there. We did one, that wasn't on MCA. We did another special edition, some more special edition albums on Blue Note. And that had Michael Caine on it. And then we did another album, which is called Extra Special Edition, mm-hmm. which featured Bobby McFerrin on it also. So, you know, hopefully I'm going to try and see if I can figure out a way to make those albums available, because you know, there's some albums that I did on Fantasy, which were recorded. I did a Jack DeJohnette Plays Piano album, which featured Freddie Waits, the late Freddie Waits, and Eddie Gomez.
Who played drums on that record? Did you?
Freddie Waits did. Okay. Was the drummer. Yeah. Jack DeJohnette Plays Piano.
Okay.
Okay. And I also did an album called Sorcery, which was recorded here in my house, actually, with Mick Goodrich, John Abercrombie, Benny Maupin, and Dave Holland. And so those people out there, you know, hopefully I want to try and make these records available. I also did another album called Cosmic Chicken, which featured Peter Warren. It was a band called Directions. This was pre-special edition. They had Mike Richman,
so it'd be nice if a lot of
Alex Foster, mm-hmm. yeah. Alex Foster and Mike Richman on bass. And John Abercrombie on guitar. And my first album as a leader was given to me by Orrin Keepnose. I did, in late 60s. And it was called The DeJohnette Complex. And this is very interesting, because I played melodica at the time. You know, that's a keyboard instrument that sounds like a harmonica. But
you blow into it, right?
Blow into it, right. And it featured Roy Haynes on drums, also Miroslav Vitos on bass, and Eddie Gomez on bass, and Stanley Cowell on piano, and Benny Maupin on saxophone and flute. So, you know, alternating different tracks. I had either Eddie Gomez or Miroslav then I had a track with two bass players on it, and and I played the melodica with tenor. So I wrote a song for Roy Haynes called Papa Daddy and Me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then I did another album, which was in I recorded when I was in Japan, but featured myself and Dave Holland. It's called Have You Heard? And, you know, that's kind of hard to get. I hope to somehow make it available maybe on my website at some point, all these CDs for people to find out the earlier history of Jack DeJohnette's band leader.
See, that's why jazz record collections are so rabid, because these guys who collect jazz records, you can't find them. A lot of, except for, like you said, labels like ECM that really support the back catalog, you know, they don't keep these records out long enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's America. It's a shame, because a lot of history of some of the musicians that you like, you can't get because the record companies delete them after they don't sell, and they don't and it's a shame. It's a crime, really, I think, because that's history.
Yeah, and sometimes it takes a record to catch a little while to catch on. Like, there'll be a lot of times where somebody will come up to you and say, "Have you heard this record?" You'd be like, "No, well, it came out 6 or 7 years ago, and maybe now it's fine, it was ahead of its time at the time, and now it's time for you to get into it, and it's not available anymore."
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I'm gonna look into trying to make it possible for, because the record company is just sitting on those. They're not doing anything. So, I mean, the musicians should be able to have that, those masters, and at least while they're alive, get some benefit for them. And also, the listeners and the jazz fans should be able to have access to that material.
Well, I'm sure that you're very proud of the work you've done for ECM. That stuff's all still available. It's some of the best music out there in the world.
I'm grateful to it, not only myself, but all the other artists on the label.
It's a wonderful label, not just from artist support, but they consistently put out good recordings. They're always recorded well, and they have a good aural quality to them, as well as having expert playing on pretty much every release they put out.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking to Jack DeJohnette. This is WAIF in Cincinnati. We've got another phone call on hold. If you would like to call in and talk to us here on WAIF, we're talking to Jack DeJohnette. Jazz drummer and composer and band leader. The phone number here is 513-961-8900. Hello, Johnny. You're on the air with Jack DeJohnette.
Yeah. We just want to thank him for all the great work that he's contributed to the world of music over the past 4 decades plus.